Welcome to the Choate Family Office podcast series. On this show, we explore important topics related to wealth management, investing, and managing risk across generations.
Hello, this is Henry Dormitzer, and I am a managing director with Choate Investment Advisors. Today, we are going to talk about a really interesting topic with my colleague, Jeremiah Solomon. Jeremiah is the director of information security at Choate Hall & Stewart, which is just a wild job. And Jeremiah, I have a lot of questions to ask for you today. I bet you every one of the people listening to this podcast has the experience I did today, which is getting at least two texts. I got offered $100,000 today, and I don't think it's real. So Jeremiah runs information security for Choate Hall & Stewart. Before that, he did it for a global management consulting firm, and before that, for a major healthcare provider and payer. So Jeremiah, I think you've seen this before. Jeremiah, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. It's great to be here and be speaking with you today about a topic that I'm very passionate about around cybersecurity and kind of protecting yourself from some of the threats out there. As you know, our team here at Choate spends a large part of our day dealing with all sorts of different notifications from firm personnel. Those include things from our technical systems, from our users themselves. We block thousands of network attacks, tens of thousands of malicious emails each day. We investigate some of the most common attacks out there, from attempts to get your credentials, phishing attacks, down to your typical scams around your tax fraud, your prizes around your $100,000 prize contribution, shipping notifications, everything you can think about, we kind of see come through our alerts every day, and makes for a very interesting job and a really interesting topic for us to talk about today.
Tens of thousands a day.
Tens of thousands a day. It's a very busy internet.
I imagine we're not unique in that regard.
No, very common. Very common. And we're a moderately sized organization. In some places, you're probably dealing with millions a day.
Wow, that's really something, and something to be watching out for. So I have a question for you to get us started, which is that, like me today, getting two clearly fraudulent texts, I've gotten two calls from clients over the last month saying that they received notification that their social security number has been found on the dark web. It's been leaked and it's out there on the dark web. What do people do in that situation?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question and something a lot of people deal with on a very frequent basis, unfortunately. We typically advise people to go through and do four things. The first thing to do is to protect yourself from any sort of identity theft and fraud, right? Go out and freeze your credit. You want to freeze your credit at each of the major bureaus, so Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. You want to leverage that free service that they have around that. They also have some paid for services that might be of interest to you if that you want additional monitoring or additional credit monitoring alerting. They are required to freeze your credit for free each time. That helps to protect people from opening up accounts for you, leveraging that social security number, date of birth, other information that might have been compromised on the internet. The second thing I typically advise people to do is open accounts with the major government organizations, the IRS, the Social Security Administration. These used to be separate accounts that you had to open. They now use a service called ID.me. This service helps to kind of make a single account a little easier to manage, which we'll talk about in my third point. This typically allows you to protect your Social Security information, protect fraudulent refund checks, things like that that typically take place when they have this information, drawing off of your Social Security account, a number of common scams that once people have your personal information, they can abuse if you don't have these accounts in place already.
I see. So the idea is get there before the bad people do and open your
own
account.
Correct. Yep.
Makes sense.
That kind of preventative maintenance is really important, especially when you know that your information has been compromised. The third item I typically would advise people to do is go out and change your passwords. And this is something that's a healthy practice to begin with, especially if you use the same password in many different places. Passwords are really important to have them be unique, long passwords that are specific to each of your services. Reuse of passwords is probably one of the most dangerous things that you can do. Oftentimes, when some type of data is compromised, it also includes your password for whatever that service that was compromised might be. So how you can do that is by using a password manager. So password managers allow you to set that unique long password for each of your services, not have to remember those passwords, but be able to easily populate them when you go to log into those services. Password managers exist for your browser, which are a little less secure. And then there's better services full-fledged password managers such as 1Password or Bitwarden. There's a number of different options out there. They all do a great job. They help to protect you, and they allow that unique password to be set and that kind of longer password.
I'm going to jump in because thanks to you, I went out and opened up a 1Password account and put all my passwords in it. And I love it. I don't know any of my passwords anymore. They're all in this and they're all different. And I couldn't remember a single one of them. Took a little startup energy to get it going. But once it's going, it's actually easier. It's terrific. Thanks.
Yeah, the initial bar to entry is a little bit challenging. But once you do get going on it and you get comfortable using it, the feedback is generally that it has made lives easier. It's a little bit intimidating at first, especially when you're dealing with any sort of new technology. But I do think there's a security value add, and the level of ease you get once it's implemented makes your life much better. Kind of a part B to that third point is also enabling multi-factor authentication. So one of the most important things you can do when you're protecting those accounts that you have is to utilize two-factor or multi-factor authentication, which a password manager can also help you manage. This is the process of, it usually requires you going into your security settings in your accounts and turning on a button of some sort and setting up either SMS text messaging or email or application-based codes that you would provide back to them to validate you are who you say you are, something that's very difficult for the bad actors to then leverage against you to get access to your accounts if you do lose access to your passwords or your passwords become compromised. This is also something that's usually a little intimidating at first to enter into, but once people get in the habit of doing it, it becomes a kind of a second nature. A lot easier the more you practice it and the more you do it.
You know, I've had someone ask me, should I not use my cell phone for two-factor authentication? Does it matter whether people use their cell phone number and receive a text or they use one of these authentication apps that are out there?
Any multi-factor authentication is better than no multi-factor authentication. Cell phones are a little bit less secure because there are attacks that do take place against cell phones themselves and cell phone numbers. In some instances, people can take over those numbers, but they are a very good option for the most part. And they are the major carriers are kind of working to help to prevent that from being a problem moving forward. But there are better options like using the Google Authenticator is what they typically reference it as option inside of your multi-factor authentication settings. And that can be done through your password manager or through the Google Authenticator app on your phone. Those tend to be a little bit more secure. They offer a little bit more of a security value add to them. And then the fourth thing we typically like to advise people to do, and this is really a really good measure regardless of whether you've had a breach or not had a breach, you've experienced some sort of data loss or had a compromised password, is really start to focus on and strengthen your digital persona. So protecting yourself and your visibility on the internet as a more holistic approach, right? Protect your social media sites. Make sure that, you know, similar with your third item I mentioned there, password secure, you have a unique password in place, you have multi-factor authentication turned on, but also do a privacy assessment there. Make sure that you're only sharing information with people that you want to share the information with, that your accounts are not public, that you're cautious about the type of information you share. All of these things can be used in conjunction with compromised data to help bad guys do more bad things. Compromise additional accounts, compromise your relatives, things of that nature. And you really want to be cautious about how you leverage those social media accounts. And the same applies with your finance sites, your shopping sites, other things that bad actors are interested in. Make sure that those passwords are secure, multi-factor authentication set up. Those are really sensitive places and are typical targets of the bad actors. Make sure you don't have any strange security configurations. Your phone numbers are correct. Your recovery email addresses are correct. Those are all things that a bad actor will typically change when they do get access to your account. And you want to make sure put accurately and correctly. Oftentimes, your accounts will ask you if you'd like to review this information. It's a good opportunity to take that to actually review those things and make sure they are correct. The other thing to do is work on reducing down your visibility from a Googling perspective, as we might call it. When you go out to Google and you put your name in, I go out, I search Jeremiah Salomon, try to reduce down by using, you know, services that remove you from data brokers and other places so that people can't find details about your history, who you are, sensitive information that might have been breached in the past, other things. Unless you're a public figure of senses and those things are important to you, it's good to maintain as small of a digital persona as possible so that you're not a target and you can't be targeted, or they can't use what we like to refer to as open source information gathering against you, or they're using open source tools or readily available tools to gather information about who you are and how they could attack you potentially.
It's always startling when you Google yourself and see that you can find so much personal information. It's nice to know you can get rid of it too. Probably cost a little bit of money.
Yes. The services that are out there are, fairly reasonably priced for what they're offering. And it's a good help to be able to go out and clean up that digital persona and remove things like your phone numbers and email addresses and other things that are typically out on the internet with data brokers.
And for those who are really curious, and this may apply to a subset of people, is it possible to find out what you can't see on the internet, like what's on the dark web about yourself?
Yeah, there's a number of different monitoring services out there. I myself am a consumer of Google services. They provide great what's called dark web monitoring. This would be a notification for your social security numbers, your email addresses, your passwords, your phone numbers, your date of birth, any other sort of personal information that might be on a breach website that you can't normally access because it's typically used by bad guys, though what they reference as the dark web. Those services are very good. Some are better than others. I'm very pleased with what I use. We get good information. It really helps me to protect my digital persona and the digital persona of my family. And I would advise most people to have some sort of service that they consume like we do in the firm here.
So this is great. And I'm going to just try to sum up the four things you said quickly. But number one is freeze your credit. And I did that, by the way. It was super easy. You can do it all online, or you can pick up the phone and call the credit rating bureaus, but it's easy to do. So number one, freeze your credit. Number two, get to the government before the fraudsters do and open your ID.me account. Number three, your passwords and multi-factor authentication. Those are things everybody can do. And then if you want to go further, I like this idea of getting yourself off the web to the greatest degree with data broker removals and maybe dark web monitoring.
Yeah, the general objective being, make yourself as little of a target as possible, or make yourself as challenging of a target as possible to some respects. That's the thing that we typically talk about when we talk about information security protection. Most bad actors out there who are trying to scam people are looking for the easiest opportunities. The most you can do to kind of protect yourself, the better.
So, Jeremiah, if people did all that stuff, do they then have to go change their email address?
Changing email addresses are typically not required. Once you kind of go through and clean up your data, if you do a good job protecting your account, strong password set, you've got multi-factor authentication on, you're cautious, you look out for typical attacks, right? Things that stress urgency, things that your $100,000 prize sound too good to be true, things that are trying to social engineer you into doing or acting on something you normally wouldn't act on. If you're keeping an eye out for those things and you're fairly protective and think twice about anything you click on, then you're typically okay. Many of the email services provide, especially your free email services, provide some sort of a spam and malicious email protections. Things do get through those protections, but if you're second guessing what you see and you're cautious, you should be okay keeping your existing email address.
Is it okay to use cloud services, a Google Drive, a Microsoft OneNote, that sort of stuff to store important information?
Yeah, there's a few things to consider when doing that. So it's your own account hygiene, right? So you want to make sure that if you're going to use those, you're going to store data in them, that you are protecting that account. And then if you're going to share data with others, you have to consider the sensitivity of that data and whether that individual themselves is protecting that data as well as you are protecting your own data. So that goes back to emailing sensitive or confidential information. You now not only have to consider the potential that if your account is compromised, that is in your email, but you need to consider the fact that whoever the recipient of that email is, if their account becomes compromised, that sensitive data is now potentially in their email address. And now you're beholden to their ability to protect their account. Do they have a unique, strong password? Do they set up multi-factor authentication? Do they have good hygiene? And those are the things to kind of keep an eye out for or consider when you are about the sensitive or potentially compromising information through email or through cloud storage. But in general, they are generally secure services.
So that's really an interesting point you're making, and one that I want to draw an example on. If I wanted to send you my social security number, the risk isn't in the transit as it's going in the internet on its way to you. The risk is that it's going to sit there as a sent email in my email box and as a received email in your email box. And then I just have to hope that you don't get hacked and I don't get hacked.
Right. That's exactly correct. And that's why things like retention policies and other things exist within large organizations like our own is so that data like that doesn't sit in boxes, so that things are like that is potentially sensitive gets removed and can't be a potential threat or risk. Very important thing to consider when you're putting that any sort of data out on the internet is how long will it be there for? And most things on the internet are forever. Once things get on the internet, they're sent through email, they are typically out there. But yes, the data in transit is generally protected as we most modern systems use strong encryption, and strong encryption is typically good enough security for most situations.
That's great. This is really helpful. And these are things that everybody can do. So thanks for spending the time with me to go through them.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Happy to help how we can and hope everyone goes out and strengthens their digital persona.
Do your four steps, everybody. Thank you.
The information provided in this recording is for informational purposes only. While Choate and Choate Investment Advisors make every attempt to present accurate information, the information on this recording may not be appropriate for your specific circumstances, and it may become outdated over time. The views expressed on this podcast should not be construed as advice for your given situation. If you have questions about your specific situation, you should consult your attorney for legal advice, and you should consult your financial advisor. Moreover, Choate Investment Advisors may decide to select investments on a different basis at any time and without prior notice. Finally, as everyone should know, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance.